This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 423, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
I don't want to fall in love. I don't want to see the stars up above in the sky. I just want to catch your eye. I don't want to be wound and dined. I just want to
podcast episode 423, a number that has no funny connotations as far as I understand. I am Josh Flanagan. I'm with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And Paul Montgomery.
What's up?
Yeah. We are iFanboy, and we're going to get a little more quote-unquote urban. We like comics. Every week we read a bunch of comics, and one of them picks the best book that we all live in major cities. I guess we are urban to begin with, but not in that.
Whoa.
All right.
Two of us live in major cities.
I'm sorry. I used to. I've lived in major cities.
You live in the woods, man.
I couldn't take it. I couldn't hack it.
Just yesterday, like 3-4 blocks around the corner from my house, three people were executed, shot in the head, their house ransacked.
You're really painting a great selling point for the urban experience.
I'm not trying to sell my house at the moment, so it's all right.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Where was I? We talk about the books on we talk about the best book they read that week. That's the pick of the week. We talk about the other books. And this week, we'll be talking about you and your relationship. But that's later after we get to the books. We have plenty of good books to talk about. And if you don't know, we'll be talking about what happens in those books. So there will be spoilers. Do not listen if you don't want to be spoiled.
Listen, the Latin market is growing.
This is how I read Ferdinand the Bull to my son, which is a book that takes place in Madrid. And he goes, will you please read it in the funny voice? And I was like, that's all I know how to do, dude.
Oh, you're not teaching him to do funny voices.
He's not. He doesn't have them yet.
This is not going to be a legacy thing.
I used to do Green Eggs and Ham and everything I could possible. My favorite was to read it was like Ian McKellen is Gandalf and like New York City garbage man guy. Those were the two in that one. I do not like them. That was fun. I want to do it right now. Connor, you had the pick. I'm not going to say I was surprised, but because it was very good. I was like, oh, good. He liked it too. That's awesome.
Well, this was a week that I haven't had in a while in which there were probably six books I could have made the case for picking. Ooh.
Not last week.
I kept reading books going, damn, that was awesome. That's probably the pick. And then another one going, oh, man, that's awesome. That was probably the pick. And then I finished up, and it was one of those weeks where I didn't have one immediately when I finished my stack of books, my digital stack of books. I sort of sat there, actually reread one of the books again, you know, still had no clear answer. And I just sort of thought about if I was to have to write a pick of the week review, and immediately one book sort of bubbled up to the top. You guys know how that works. She-Hulk number one from Charles Soule, Javier Pulido, Munsta Vincente, and Clayton Hollis. I probably said at least two of those names wrong. This is the new series from Marvel Comics. And I actually wasn't even going to check this out originally. I like She-Hulk, but not like an instant buy character. But Charles Soule, probably the best new comic writer in the last few years. And everything I've read of his lately, especially, I've really enjoyed. So once I saw he was the writer, knowing also that Charles Soule in his daytime life when he's not writing 10 books is a lawyer and that She-Hulk is a lawyer, I thought, well, I should definitely check it out because he's going to bring a level of verisimilitude to this story. Which he did, because basically this entire issue is a lawyer story. There's really not much in way of superheroing, and I hope that tone sort of stays or that theme, because it's a lot of fun to see superpowered lawyering.
He's
in
the
this
David
weird,
E. Bro. Kelly.
He
of
is
comics.
The David E. Kelly of comics. He should keep that going. It's very lucrative for David E. Kelly. But in this issue, She-Hulk. And the story opens and she's at her law firm waiting for her hefty lawyer bonus. And
how many people you think get a David E. Kelly reference at this point?
Okay.
Is that a lot of
long time since Picket Fences?
Is that just if you went to media school in the
90s? You just called him the Wonder Woman guy. And that's all we
need.
The
Wonder Woman guy, you know.
Yeah, he is the Wonder Woman guy.
I didn't even mean it that way.
And so this issue opens with She-Hulk finding herself newly unemployed after quitting her lawyer job who only hired her to get access to the Avengers. And they didn't get any Avengers law work this year, so they didn't give her bonus. She quit and ends up embroiled in a case that involves Tony Stark, a woman's supervillain husband, claimed to have his tech stolen by one company that Stark Enterprises ended up acquiring for their technology. This is all very exciting when you say it, but it actually was a really fun read. And she ends up in a case against Stark Industries or whatever it's called now. And I loved the scene where she meets the Stark Industries lawyer. It was very sort of Brazil
legal. And
it was, Kafka-esque.
Yeah.
You know, I loved the super long hallway that was canted and with the lights, and you had to walk all the way down to get to this guy at his desk, and the case where they bury them in paperwork. I mean, it was very heavy on lawyerly details that I imagine are very true.
But
not overly. It was just fun.
Yeah, it wasn't incomprehensible.
No, not at all.
It was just the right amount, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it all hinges on this case. She finds the evidence. The evidence proves that this woman's husband did invent repulsor technology, and then, you know, she gets Tony Stark to write a big check to this woman, and then uses her cut of it to start her own practice. And so, I loved it. I love the Javier Pulido art. I'm a big fan of his art and that style of art. It's very similar to the Marcos Martín, Paulo Rivera style.
Yeah,
and
I mean, that's the thing is, I don't think this works nearly as well without that. And that was really the thing that would have put me over the top, you know, if I wasn't already a fan of Soul, was Javier Pulido.
Yeah.
I don't remember when I saw him last. I'm thinking of The Shade, and I was some. Did you do some Daredevil?
Or well, it's in that style, so that was Rivera and that was Martin. He would have fit there. I don't know if he did or not.
One of the things, I mean, this is the kind of stuff that is really tough, I think, to do in comics.
Mm-hmm.
In that there's a lot of talking and there's a lot of stuff. And if you kind of – I'm going through these pages and I'm looking at – the layouts are really fun because there's a lot of repetition of images that create this sort of effect. I really like the page after she cracks the table in half and she goes to the bar and she orders the drink. And you just see her – well, her boobs basically, but it's not like that. Go across – like diagonally across as we go down the panels. And then there's sort of one word balloon at the end.
But also, there's a story going on.
Yeah, there is.
Which I didn't.
I just saw that now as you said that. I was like, oh, look, there's.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't the focus, wasn't so much her chest. It was the fact that the client is in the background trying to drum up a lawyer to represent her, and they're all rejecting her and laughing at her. And so we see that in the background happening as She-Hulk is getting a drink at the bar. I thought this was altogether just a great bit of comic book storytelling. Great story, felt authentic from a writer who is a lawyer, but not in a way that was mired in jargon.
And just, I guess, the culture of attorneys, I suppose. The bar and the sort of the way that they talk to each other.
The
and
bonus meeting.
Yeah, and it's all conversations. And, you know, it was actually a really wordy comic.
All right, I mean, if you look at that double-page spread with legal.
Yeah.
I mean, those are some Walking Dead-esque word balloons.
Yeah, but it didn't feel like it.
No.
And like the last page with Tony. And, you know, the whole time she's like, yeah, I know him. I'll just talk to him. But, you know, the reasons that she couldn't get to him. And
the thing is, it's funny. I think being very wordy works in this kind of story because that's kind of the point.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the legal system is so crazy. And that's
well, it's the culture of it's sort of the fine print. And you're sort of overwhelmed by the legalese. But it's not so daunting. And it just comes across as authentic.
Here's the thing about comic book storytelling, I think, it tends to be, if something is wordy and it doesn't work for me, it's because there's a lot of exposition.
Right.
And if this didn't feel like exposition.
No, because it was like, do you remember we used to have that awesome legal page on iFanboy? It was like that. You know, it's funny legalese.
Yeah.
And it's probably still there. Yeah, it's got to be still there. So it worked. And I thought the art was great. I love that there's this subsection of artists who won't draw Tony with the goatee. Continue to draw him with the mustache.
Yeah.
I love that. And it just felt, it was very exciting. I love the colors. You know, I think that.
Yeah.
Did Polito color it himself?
No, it's.
The name I butchered.
You also said Cowless, which I think it's just cows.
I took a leap of faith on that one.
Yeah. Munza. I've never heard the name Munza. That's a new name. Munza Vicente.
Yeah, great colors. Very pop arty. I liked it. I liked it a lot. I mean, this is really fun. I mean, She-Hulk's a great character. It's an interesting character. She's got a long history. You know, she had a very famous solo. Book by John Byrne that was very popular in the 90s. 80s, 90s, but it was also very fourth wall breaking, which this doesn't appear to be. She had the Dan Slott series, people liked a lot, and then, you know, this one. She's a great character because you can do a lot with her.
Yeah.
I do like the idea that she's just this giant, green-skinned Amazonian woman who works at a law firm and no one seems to...
I like the juxtaposition of that thing. Like, she is a giant, you know, strong superhero.
Yeah, and there's really... There's only two instances where that's sort of important, where she breaks the table and then when she takes on the automatons and Stark Industries in the lobby and then goes up and confronts Tony and her, you know, clothes are all threadbare and everything. And but it's
all the fighting takes place. Yeah, all the fighting, though, takes place off panel.
Off panel. Exactly. Yeah. So you just have that constant reminder that she's green. And that's it's just this nice little clue, this nice little reminder.
Look at the lettering on the page. She cracks her knuckles, and then the first panel is the ding, and they made it look like the I is like the upside down exclamation point. How it would be in Spanish?
Yeah,
it's just a nice little bit of design they threw in there, but it's also a really cool cinematic comedy beat that's thrown into a comic book page. Ding, open.
Yeah, no, it's you can see it cinematically, and actually in an era where Marvel is doing a lot of live action work on TV and film, this is actually a really great concept for a TV series because, as you said, the action is mostly off screen. Mm-hmm. It's mostly about superhero lawyer, which is a funny premise.
They should get that Ally McBeal guy to do it.
Son of a bitch. So the other book that almost was the pick that I read a few times and it came down to a mental coin flip was Batman 28. This is not the next issue of Zero Year.
It is not.
It's a secret glimpse into Batman Eternal.
We discussed this, I think, with 27 as well, that the main problem I have with the series isn't the story at all. It's the fact that they keep dropping in these extra stories to a story that's already long, making it feel much longer than it actually is. But putting that aside, I really liked the idea. So this was, as Josh or Paul, one of you said, I wasn't really paying attention.
That was me,
that this was a sort of flash forward to the next big Batman story, Batman Eternal, where we're in the future a little bit, not too far.
It's soon, and I believe.
It's soon. We're going to see it. And it's, you know, Gotham has all gone to hell and something's gone wrong. And now Catwoman is in charge of all the crime and she hates Batman. But what I liked about it was that it made you work for it. You had no idea what was going on. You were expecting the Riddler and you were expecting early Batman and you weren't getting that. And then it was, well, what's happening? Why are these things going on? And I liked that sense of anticipation because now I'm actually curious about all these things. What is happening? And why does Batman have a new sidekick in Harper Row who calls herself Bluebird? The big reveal at the end is that Stephanie Brown is the spoiler is there. She's apparently key to the whole thing.
Spoiler alert.
And I liked the art. I liked the art a lot. I just really enjoyed it as a glimpse into what's coming. Now, I can see how it'd be really annoying for absolutely.
I think strategically it was very odd.
Yes.
Especially, we had talked about how, why this Zero Year thing's been going on a long time. And it got interrupted. And to interrupt it again and see, like, here's what's coming up next. Like, I don't want to see what's coming up next yet. And I think that sort of makes it hard.
It's jarring, but I do kind of agree that that kind of works to its favor. I mean, it works against it in some ways, but it also works to its favor in that in the beginning, we're sort of, we don't know as much as Harper does about the status quo, but she is in a situation where she doesn't know exactly what to expect. She's trying to infiltrate the last nightclub still open in Gotham and to meet this kingpin. And even when she meets this heavily scarred, you know, heavy, she's like, is this the Kingpin? I don't really know. And then you find out later that it's Selena, who is basically saying that I'm not going to wear the mask anymore. This is sort of the new
incarnation. I'm not going to play the games anymore.
This is the new incarnation of Catwoman, and she's not as playful. But what's while saying that, I thought there was a really playful issue, and it's a very different tone for Scott Snyder. And this is co-written by James Tynion IV, and I don't know what the breakdown in that collaboration was. I like Harper Row a lot. I like that we're finally to that point where, like, you know, what is she going to be? Is she going to be the new Robin? Is she going to be something? Is she going to be a Batgirl? Is she going to be something else? And she's her own thing in this Bluebird thing. And it's sort of a way, I think, of Snyder and company being that they're doing the best stuff and almost solely the best stuff at DC Comics right now. They're sort of taking it on and coming up with their own new mythology. I mean, they've been playing around in the Zero Year stuff for a while, but now it's moving forward. Let's use spoiler. Let's introduce this Bluebird character. And honestly, to me, even with Dustin Nguyen coming back, and I've missed, you know, him doing outside of Lil Gotham.
He's great.
Yeah.
It's really good. And it puts me in mind, even though it's stylistically different, it puts me in mind of like Batman the Animated Series. And I think tonally the script approaches that as well.
Yeah, I loved the sequence where, you know, she shuts the lights off. She has a little clicker, lights go dead. And, you know, black panel, pop up, Batman is standing, you know, amongst all the knocked out goons. It was just a great sequence. It was a really fun issue.
I dug this. I dug her as one of the, you know, superhero sidekicks. They've been, I guess, you know, teasing at that for a while. It's nice to see it. I think it's the same thing. Like right now, there's like a Robin problem.
Yeah.
In that Dick Grayson's not Robin, and
Tim's,
you know,
not Robin.
Damian's like, this is the kind of partner it's fun to watch Batman with.
Yeah.
And I don't need her to be Robin, but if it's just the two of them doing stuff together, and he seems, the way that they wrote him is not that same grim Batman that we've seen, like we saw in the recent, I think it was the Batman and Robin issue you told me to read.
Right. Oh, God, yeah.
The flashback. I mean,
he's not going to Frankenstein and trying to figure out how to resuscitate Damien, and it's just...
Yeah, no, but no, not even that. I mean, the one where, like, he's just being a dick to Dick.
Oh, yeah.
And he's not, you know, like, he's like, nope, you're off, you're done. He's not letting them learn, like, there's a give and take. There was a thing where I thought Batman hated guns. I do, but she doesn't. That's a big sea change right there.
Yeah.
Yeah,
That's an important kind of thing, and it
also
felt
wasn't really
like
a gun, though. It was a fucking...
No, but it felt like... one of the really fun things about like Dark Knight Returns was that Batman had a different attitude about Harry.
Glint in his eye.
Yes,
that story,
and
which he
that
had here.
Was in this, and I liked that a lot. I think that's really cool. To be honest, I would be cool if this was this. Like, if we're like, I've kind of lost track of where I am with Year Zero to a certain extent. So This is cool. I'm totally down with this.
Well, you can jump over to this. This is the new series, Batman Eternal. So you can start reading that story.
I love this single page panel. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
With Harper hanging by her like foot boot thing. What a great, great page that is, and just a cool bit of superhero-y tech. I was really impressed.
And it sort of tells you everything you need to know about that character. She's into the gadgets and stuff, and you know, and it's a high-flying, almost acrobatic kind of character. And I miss that. I do. So that being said, so I'm excited now for this, you know, Batman Eternal thing, but I'm also... I think we're actually at the good point, that the really exciting
Zero
point
Year.
Of Zero Year that I'm
yeah,
really
exactly.
looking
That's
forward
why
to.
I was shocked yeah. than anything to read this.
Yeah. Now that the stuff leading up to it hasn't been interesting, but this is the stuff that I've been dying for since that first issue where we get to see Batman on a horse. And I don't know why
How
that's exciting, but it
that?
Always is.
It was like 7 issues ago.
And those are like full on real monthly. So it's been going on for the better part of a year.
Right. It's supposed to be 11 parts, and then we've had two of these non-story issues. We had the Fear... I keep wanting to say Fear Itself. Is that what it's called? Fear Itself? No, that's Marvel.
Forever
Evil. It's a tie-in issue with the Riddler in the present, and then we had this issue. So it's going to end up being 13 months total, which is a year plus. And I'm told, I did some question asking, that there'll be no more fill-in issues or special issues for the remainder of the story, but we'll see if that actually happens. So I thought it was great fun, super fun. I'm actually really looking forward to Batman Eternal now, which I wasn't before. But I would have liked to see the next chapter of Riddler.
So the other morning, I said, I'm going to try this new series from Vertigo, which doesn't sound like something that I would say very
so
often.
You're so out on a limb for you.
But at the same time, lately, it's kind of a big deal. The book is called The Royals, Masters of War. First issue came out by Rob Williams and Simon Colby, well-known British creators. I'm just going to – this felt like – here's the pitch. Alternate World War II – all of the European royals have superpowers.
Oh, it's just all the royals. They read the back matter. They're going to end up with, you know, the Japanese emperor has powers. And,
yeah. And so, like, and if you look, you know, like if you know anything about European history, then you'll know that most of the European royals were related to each other one way or another, not just among their own families, but across, you know, Spain and Germany and
France.
Yeah.
I mean, they're basically all Victorious.
He leaves out a really good pitch in that letter in the back of the book.
I mean, it was so obvious when reading, like finishing the first issue, I was like, that's brilliant. This was totally up my alley, and it felt like how comics felt in like 2000, in the Warren Ellis.
Interesting and exciting. And
yeah. This felt like I can't believe this wasn't a Warren Ellis book. And I mean that in the best way.
I like it. Paul just mentioned it. In the back, he explained, you know, the idea that in the real world, the idea is that the royal blood imbues you with some sort of higher, you know, status.
Superiority.
So in this, he's taken to the extreme that the royal blood is actually imbues you with powers, and that's why the royals have been inbreeding, is to keep the bloodline pure, because the more pure the blood, the stronger your powers are.
It's a really elegant premise, because also they have this idea that there's this sort of pact, this contract between all of the different royal powers, that that's the families who have the powers will not step in because warfare is for the commoners. It's for the people on the ground, the peasants and everything. And we're not going to get involved. We're going to keep the playing field just for those, you know, grunts. And you have this great moment sort of mirroring, you know, the Superman the movie moment where Clark and Lois go flying and how magical that is. Mm-hmm. Here it's Henry taking this woman through the night sky, and she's like, "Oh, it's just
his
like
sister."
Right, yeah, it's just like Peter Pan, and they get on the ground, and the whole color scheme changes, and it's all orange because it's this bombed out city street, and children crying, and you know all of this devastation, and he's like, no, it's not like Peter Pan at all, and it's just his, you know, opening his eyes, he's the silver spoon opening his eyes to the realities of war, and I've got to do something. These are my people. I've got, and so you have that opening scene where he's part of the RAF basically, and he's jumping out of planes with no parachute because he can fly because he's a superhero.
He's basically got Superman's powers.
Yeah.
It's interesting also that like the royals themselves are not the actual royals from World War II. It's like a strange amalgamation of Albert from the 1800s and his sons. Yeah. Makes me wonder if they are really, really, really old, because I think the back matter said that the Emperor of Japan is immortal. I loved it. I mean, the only thing is like another – I think we need a 5-year moratorium on twins having a weird sexual relationship or romantic relationship. But other than that
– Well, hold on. Let's hear him out.
just in fiction in general. But
look at how he draws these planes.
I mean, this was a great story, but for me – The A story for this is that Simon Colby is fantastic. The art is wonderful in this.
Mm-hmm. It's exactly the right kind of art that it needed for this. It's like a touch of Brian Hitch in there, but
more dynamic and less.
Yeah,
less.
A little, I mean, it's almost like he's an amalgam. He's doing a bunch of stuff that I see in a lot of British comic artists from the last decade, not current ones, but like that Chris Weston, Brian Hitch, you know. Mm-hmm. It's 2000 AD artists, and I think that's where they come from.
It's really, really good. There's a great one-page shot of him flying through the air with all the planes behind him.
Yeah, all the Spitfires.
Yeah, oh, just gorgeous. This is a 6-issue miniseries, so if it sounds...
I'm bursting. I was like, this is a fantastic book.
If this sounds fun to you, then I would say check it out. Yeah. It's really, really good.
Josh, you mentioned Warren Ellis. I just imagine him looking at this and his eyes lighting up, you know, looking at this Simon Colby art.
Yeah,
like, it looks a lot like...
It looks a lot like, if you remember Ministry of Space a long time ago, which was a book that really didn't quite deliver on the promise of the premise as much as it did, but it's a really good looking, I think it was 3 issues or something like that. So it's a little, it reminded me of that a little bit, but back in time.
Another great first issue this week, The Mercenary Sea from Image Comics, and it's high pulp adventure, and this is thematically similar, right as World War II is about to break out.
1938. It's in the middle of the Japanese... I don't know what that war is called, the Chinese-Japanese war.
Yeah, so it's a United Colors of Benetton crew of adventurers in a submarine.
Han Solo.
There's the white alpha male from Boston. There's the black guy looks like Carl Weathers. There's the German U-boat captain. There's the
girl
British
in the Phillies cap.
There's the old British doctor. There's the American Indian with war paint. There's an Asian guy. There's a French guy in a beret. I mean, it's very consciously pulpy. I mean, there's even a direct lift of dialogue from Casablanca. It's very much that kind of, you know, guys who are, or women who are no longer fit in their homelands out in the world, having adventures and making money. And, you know, there's a quote unquote savage tribe who they run into. You think it's going to be one thing, but it actually
They play to these expectations, and then suddenly they're firing up some popcorn and watching
Duck Soup.
Watching Duck Soup, yeah.
That is Nick Fury, right? Who shows up?
Yes.
Well,
the spy with the great temples and the iPads. Yeah. Great.
Again, I think we mentioned this on all of the things that we've talked about so far, but you know, it's almost this doesn't work without really wonderful and interesting art from Matthew Reynolds. It's like this. It's hard to describe.
I've seen it described. Yeah, like sort of like Archer on FX. Like it's sort of that film cell kind of look. It reminds me also like the older, like Adult Swim kind of stuff that would be on Cartoon Network at night. And that's a plus. And it can also be a minus in that the characters feel a little static sometimes.
It feels
you know, a little bit stiff because you are looking at sort of character models that are being moved along. It's very much, you can see a foreground layer and a background layer that's often sort of like, you know, got like a gauze kind of effect over it.
I think, but stylistically, I think it worked very well.
Oh, no, it absolutely does.
And tonally, I guess.
Yeah. Great colors too. Atmospheric stuff. I loved like the opening in like in a blue and green kind of look, and like it really works for those shadowy scenes, especially when we've got the lead guy talking to basically Race Bannon in a captain's hat. any book that has like an older guy with white hair who's also a tough guy and he's got a captain's hat and a black turtleneck. That's a great book. That's Temple of Doom. Yeah. Not Temple of Doom, Raiders, excuse me.
ICC McQueen.
Oh, sure.
It's really fun. And it's another example of another interesting book from Image, unlike all the other books they're publishing. And I really hope there isn't some superpower reveal in the third issue. And this is just a ragtag bunch of mercenaries who somehow have a submarine that they used to sail around the South China Sea and take on jobs.
They have a submarine.
I don't know how they have that.
The cover is fantastic.
Yeah. The cover's really
cool. I'm looking at it right now. I hadn't really looked at it,
but like the sea is sort of canted off to the side, and then like under the surface, there's a lot of silhouette in this book, and it was reflected on the cover too. And I hadn't even noticed like the logo has the submarine in it. I mean, it's all kind of kitschy and throwbacky. There's these, and then like under the surface of the water, there's the land, or not the landmines, but I guess the sea mines, and then the sharks or whales or whatever in it.
Yeah.
What a great, like the cover. I've been looking at the cover for 2 minutes.
It's one of the better covers I've seen. Yeah. I love the angle of the sea as it's rolling. It's really wonderful.
It is.
And I love that it just throws you right in. And because these characters are so, you've seen them in other places. And, you know, it's really familiar.
You don't need the backstory.
You don't need the backstory, even though they give you kind of the backstory. But you're like, aha, yeah, exactly. The guy, you know, the Carl Weathers guy refused to throw a fight. He was a boxer. And
who was it? John Jackson?
Yeah. Something like that.
It's Jackson.
John Smokestack Jackson.
And, Smokestack is awesome.
Royal Army surgeon killed a patient while drunk, stripped of rank and medical license.
And he knows that his name Doc is stupid.
can you guys start calling me Smokestack?
No, I think that's racist.
All right, fine. So that was
you take that soup, baby, you throw it in a pot.
There's one page where he looked exactly like Carl Weathers.
Yes, there was. I saw that. I can't take Carl Weathers seriously anymore, so that makes it harder. Because of Arrested Development. You can purchase your wares from Amazon by going to ifanboy.com/Amazon. And if you do that, a portion of your purchase price will be diverted to our ill deeds.
Coffers.
Is what will happen. Yes, the coffers. The deep, dark, cavernous coffers.
I'm going to look and see. Cavernous. I'm going to see if they have a submarine that you can buy on Amazon.
Ooh, if you have a submarine, then you know what the next logical step is. We all give ourselves cool nicknames, and we all get in that submarine, and we all have adventures.
That's yep.
Right. Adventures. Buy us a submarine. So I'm seeing wind-up submarines.
Doesn't cost you a cent. It's just an easy way if you're going to buy stuff anyway. Do it that way. So ifanboy.com/Amazon. Just keep that link bookmarked, and you never have to think about it again. And we thank those of you that do. You can also contribute more directly with cold, hard cash, which can be used to procure the services of nefarious seafarers. Or just us. You could go to ifanboy.com/registration. You can contribute directly $3 a month or $30 a year. And that keeps the podcast going. And it keeps us keeps you in our good graces, basically. Because if we do become seafaring mercenaries, who knows how badly that could go. So this is really...
It's going to go epically badly, but it's going to be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And
one of us is going to die in the first day.
listen, none of us is George Clooney. So that's a problem right away.
So Star Wars 14, this is part two of 5 Days of the Sith, the story about the young Imperial officer who has to ferry Vader around while he has his little secret mission. And I'm of two minds of this particular arc. I really liked the idea of what this kind of thing would do to this Imperial officer. And I liked the ending where she's basically scarred for life by it and is seeing Vader in the mirror and, you know, ends up on the floor of the bathroom shaking because of what she went through. I like that part a lot. I don't know how much I want to see inside the psyche of Darth Vader and have, you know, his bad dreams about killing Obi-Wan and stuff like that.
I didn't like that.
Yeah.
I liked everything but that. What I really liked was the fact that all of the, like, he's trying to go outside of channels.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got, just like in episode 4, he represents a strange position in the Empire.
He's not really part of the hierarchy.
Yeah, and he's
not on the org chart.
He's allowed to work, you know, to do what he wants, but at the same time, like, you know, Grand Moff Tarkin was the guy telling him what to do.
Right.
You know, release him. And he just occupies that strange space, and I really like that. I like how that works. And also, you know, the Sith, I don't like saying that because it's a prequel term, are all about, you know, backstabbing and competition.
No, the Sith, wasn't the Sith a...
The Sith is a... That was like,
yeah, but the sort of the way that it works. I mean, it was sort of in Return of Jedi. Anyway, the whole sort of foundation of the Sith, and I guess the Empire, is sort of based on backstabbing a little bit, mm-hmm. you know, and there was a bit of that there where you see that Vader's authority is not absolute. I think that's really cool. That's a good sort of theme.
Now, I didn't read this one. You mentioned a bathroom. I don't remember ever seeing a bathroom in the original trilogy or the prequels. What do bathrooms – and is this on a Star Destroyer or is this on
– It was neither faster nor more intense, so it was cut.
Okay. It was a really fun two-part story.
Yeah, yeah. Got it across. You know, she's just a worker. She's got a job to do.
Yeah.
Not her fault. She joined the military. What are you going to do?
You got to do what your quasi-weirdo black-clad boss says. Thor, God of Thunder 19 is the return of Esad Ribic in the new storyline in which Thor goes environmentalist.
I don't know who signed me up for this hippie tree-hugging crap. But
Thor's pissed that the people of Earth are destroying it. And to start, I liked this issue a lot. I thought there were two moments where I had problems with the storytelling, which was surprising because Esad Ribic is so good. The first one was... So the main story is that the Roxxon Corporation is really super evil and they are actively melting the polar ice caps while also importing ice from...
Space ice.
Jupiter. To sell to the people, you know, who need the ice, who need the fresh water. And Thor shows up and with apparently a giant mountain from Jotunheim.
Yep.
My problem was you couldn't tell it was a giant mountain. At first,
it did not appear to be a giant mountain.
It just looked like he had like a little boulder. And I was like, well, how's that going to help?
Let's say a little boulder.
From the two panels you see it,
you're just seeing the tip of the iceberg, though.
Right,
but they didn't show the scale.
Yeah,
they can do quite easily.
I like the cutaway where we see how he got it, where he was smacking around a frost giant.
Sure, but it just sort of undercut the scene because
mountain worth of ice into the Arctic waters,
it's going to displace some.
I believe that's going to cause a problem. I believe that is the problem actively that we're facing.
Also, mountains aren't ice;
they are in Jotunheim
rock. Well, okay.
Aha!
Okay, there was also another one I can't think of at the moment off the top of my head. I'm trying to find it, but I like this issue a lot. It stood out to me that there was two instances in the issue where I was surprised that there was a storytelling problem. But other than that, we get to see more of Thor's new possible girlfriend, Roz Solomon, the agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. who is in charge of environmental matters, or the newest agent in that department anyway. And
Roz was Jack Kirby's wife's name.
Well, there you go.
And you know how you can sort of get recruited by, you know, the CIA or various alphabet soup agencies by learning Arabic. You can get a job at S.H.I.E.L.D. by learning whale.
She did it like Dory from Finding Nemo.
Exactly. So, and I think I like that a lot. I like Coulson sort of like ribbing her for, you know, maybe dating Thor. Where's your boyfriend? You know,
he had that voice down really strong.
Yeah, it was like, we haven't really had a date yet. And I like that she's bad at issuing threats. She's not subtle at all when she's talking to the Roxxon guy. I think she's a really interesting character.
Oh, the other thing was when we see the Roxxon CEO all pissed off about losing to Thor, and his face goes all weird in one panel, and that wasn't really going on.
Well, I think we're going to see more of that.
I assume he's an alien of some kind, but I thought it just was... No. It wasn't handled in such a way that you got an idea of what...
I think there's a clue. They say what his nickname was.
I feel like Paul knows something.
I do.
Yeah. See, there you go. Deal with what's in the issue, Paul, not what
that's
you know
fair,
is coming.
That's fair.
And then we also get old King Thor. So he returns in the future and he goes back to Earth, where it is many millennia, and Earth has been long since destroyed by humans. And he's been slowly trying to regrow things on Earth. And then Galactus shows up. This is going to be a great storyline. I love this issue. This was one of the ones in contention for Pick of the Week.
It's a really inspired idea. Give Galactus to Esad Ribic. And I don't know who I'm more afraid of, Galactus or old King Thor. Both are very formidable. And I like the way that Esad Ribic teases the idea of Galactus. Some, you know, artists, you say, you show Galactus in all his glory, and they show him in all his glory. Here, we actually see him in the distance, and there's a lot of, you know, sand and atmospheric stuff in the way. And we just sort of, it's not exactly a silhouette, but, you know, we just see the form. We don't see all the, you know, the purple and the blue, and I don't know how vibrantly he's going to show that later on. But it's a really cool tease as to the coming of Galactus.
Yep. So the last days of Midgard is the new storyline. And have you noticed Marvel's new way of tricking you to think it's a new number one issue? And they put the tiny issue number at the bottom right-hand corner and the giant number one for the new storyline at the top of the issue. The last days of
There's
Midgard.
There's nothing to take away from my reading experience.
No, not at all. I just find it interesting that they're basically doing the renumbering with every new storyline thing without actually doing it.
I like how we are not going to give in to whatever their dot numbering is. Whatever comes after the number, it's your problem. I'm not on that.
Let's talk about X-Men books.
So, Cy Spurrier ended his run on X-Men Legacy with issue number 24, and he started a new run on X-Force number 1, which combines Cable and the X-Force and Uncanny X-Force. It's now just X-Force with Cable in the lead. I wanted to focus on X-Men Legacy, which is, I haven't talked about it a lot, but it's quietly was just a really smart, fascinating character study for Legion, who I didn't know a whole lot about until I started reading this. And now it's kind of bittersweet because, spoilers, the end of this issue, he sort of unwrites himself from history, and he only sort of exists in the mind of his girlfriend throughout much of the series, Blindfold, who's sort of a precog mutant, and no one else seems to remember Legion, and that was sort of his sacrifice. He's sort of this all-powerful mutant. He was the son of Charles Xavier, David Haller, and he just became all-powerful. He could take on all these different powers from these alternate personalities in his head that he became the jailer of at the beginning of the series. And he was all sort of looked down upon and shunned by the other mutants because he just caused trouble in the past and, you know, rewrote realities and messed up the world a whole bunch. I like the message at the end of this where he sort of sacrifices himself and says, you know, even though I won't exist, the story still matters and stories matter. And it was kind of a backdoor way of saying, if you're the only person reading and enjoying this and, you know, no one else maybe supported this story or they said, oh, that's trash, you know, that's whatever. As long as it matters to you, it's a story that matters and it'll live on forever. And really touching piece at the end of the book, and I really got to give him props for going out on top and doing something cool with a character that people probably didn't expect him to do much with. So that was it was a cool ending for that story. And then X-Force is a little bit all over the place, but I like his take on the characters. He writes Phantom X a little more Pepe Le Pew than I've seen him written before. I mean, I know the character's French, but he's really French in this book. I don't have a great take on Cable, but this is sort of about X-Force becoming a global superpower, representing the mutants as a nation. And that's kind of an interesting take. I like Marrow in here. She's sort of it's a character that I've never read before, to be honest, but she's a very, you know, plucky character. And I liked her a lot. She's sort of like just let me at him, kind of scrappy kind of character. It's an interesting start. I don't know if I'll latch onto it in the same way as I did with his take on Legion, but, and I can't believe I'm saying that, but it was a really interesting take on a character, and I hope people go back and check out that book, X-Men Legacy, and see it for what it is, which is, it's just a really smart, insightful look at a character. Maybe more of that will come in X-Force.
And that's not all of the X-ing that we wanted to explain. I hadn't mentioned Marvel Knights X-Men. It's written and drawn by Bram Revell. You may remember him from a series called Gorillas a while back. It started at Image. It finished and ended at Oni, I believe. But it ended up being two graphic novels volumes. I don't think I ever finished it. I was excited to see his name on something like this because I really like his art style and I really like his storytelling in the other story. But I didn't know what he'd do with these characters. And it's sort of a one-off X-Men story of like they all go off to find they see a vision of a mutant getting captured by somebody, and they like a bunch of X-Men head off down to somewhere in the vague South, maybe Florida, Louisiana, something like that. And they find like a town full of biker meth maker, meth dealer people, and it's not meth, it's mutant drug things.
Mutant growth hormone?
Nah, they're like drugs that are derived by captured mutants, and there's these two mutants that they find they want to bring to the school, and not everything is as it seems, and it's a sort of story, it takes place in a bubble. And
what's the X-Men team?
Little character study. Let's see, is Wolverine, Rogue, Kitty Pryde. That might be the three. I don't know if there's anyone else. And they're all dealing with it. One of the mutants makes them deal with sort of their demons that then get made into physical form. It's a fun little story. And his art is still pretty great. And cool. He's definitely got range and he's got chops. So if you know, ever heard of that, it's definitely worth checking out. These Marvel Knights books are actually pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Between Winter Soldier, The Bitter March number one, and Dr. Mindbubble over in Captain America, Rick Remender is basically saying, I'm going to live in the 60s for a little while.
Yeah, he's doing an Ian Fleming
kind of
thing.
Well, yeah, obviously. But this is from the very first, from the cover even, you sort of get the vibe of what this book is. It's S.H.I.E.L.D. in the 60s. And it says Winter Soldier, but he is at this point in time still a Russian agent who is the bad guy of this story, at least right now, which means the hero of the story is...
Ran Shen.
Actual Nick Fury. Real grizzled, gray-templed Nick Fury. Which is great. Haven't seen him in a while, so we get to see him running. And he's not obviously a director of S.H.I.E.L.D. at this point. He's still an agent, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
He's called S.H.I.E.L.D.'s number one agent. So he goes off with S.H.I.E.L.D.'s number two agent to stop Hydra from doing something which I cannot recall. Oh, they had captured two Nazi scientists. So there's lots of intrigue here. There's the conflict of Nick Fury having to rescue Nazis from Hydra, which he's not happy about. And then, you know, Winter Soldier shows up and causes problems because he's Winter Soldier.
That Hydra agent in the beginning is on a uniski with a rocket on it.
Although that Nazi castle.
Yeah.
Also, that cover's by Andrew Robinson of the Fifth Beetle.
Yeah. You guys talked about him last week, right? He did that Batman story in Batman Black and White.
Oh.
It's really good. Yeah, this was great. I mean,
it was great.
If you like high-flying 60s Marvel action with Nick Fury and fighting an evil Bucky Barnes, then here you go.
Shaken and starred.
Roland Boschi doing a sort of cool, again.
So Steranko-esque.
Yeah, the little animated kind of style. It's the colors are flat.
Yeah.
Good stuff. That really worm thing.
It's fun. It's like, you know, capital.
Is this a mini-series or is this an ongoing series?
This is a mini-series.
Yeah. A Bitter March. So there you go. Those are the books that came out this week. A lot of great books. I thought really, really strong week. There was more books we could have talked about. But we must keep the ball rolling because the last couple of months or so, we've been requesting your romance questions in honor of it being Valentine's Day weekend. I'm sure all of you had a fine Valentine's Day. And so we thought we would answer some of your questions about romance related to comics in some way. And many of you sent them in. We thank you all for, you know, it's not easy to write in about romance problems. So we appreciate everyone who wrote in and took the time to do that, trusted us with that. Now we should, you know, disclaimer, we're not experts in this field.
Well,
I mean, you know.
Well, I've been married for a long time.
Josh has been married for a long time. I you know, I have done things.
Maybe some kind of things that I've never even heard of.
Right. So, you know, we all bring different things to the table here. And we're just saying, please take this with the spirit it's offered, which is help from some friends who may not be experts in the field. So
I offered some guidance on the opening season of Masters of Sex.
So there you go. So we will not take any responsibility for anything that we say here. So the first one, Andrew from Parts Unknown writes and says, assume your significant other likes comics. We won't consider the issue where you have to convince them of the medium and its merits. What series, OGN, run, etc., do you break up with them if they don't like? To put it simply, you feel this series is so good or so enjoyable that anyone who doesn't like it, who likes comics, has something wrong with them.
Well, last week we nearly kicked James off for saying that he didn't absolutely love Preacher. Would we have kicked him out of the bed, though? James has many other qualities that we like.
Josh, would you dump your wife if she said she hated Preacher?
Yeah. No.
Has she said it?
No. I mean, the fact is you're going to like different things.
Right.
And it's good that you like different things and you shouldn't.
What if she was really belligerent about it? Like, what if she was very.
Shut up about it.
Like, she would just.
But there's,
throw out your copies of Preacher, and you get new copies, and you keep throwing them out.
Well, that's extreme. And
tossing them in the thresher, I assume you have, because you live in the woods.
That means that that person is unreasonable.
Yes. Yeah.
On the other hand,
larger problem.
There's all sorts of stuff. Like, I don't understand. There's a nerd mentality that you have to be with somebody who likes all the same stuff and kinds of stuff that you do. Like, that's the be all end all. Like, oh, finally, I have a buddy who will go to see all these things with me. And I don't know that that's good. I don't know that that's so important.
At least in a relationship, it's good to have friends who have
You should have some things in common, but you don't have to have all things in common. My wife watches some shitty TV shows that I don't like, but I don't care that she likes them. There are things that she hates. Like, I like Primus. I liked them a lot more when I was younger. If that comes on shuffle while we're driving the car, she will throw my iPhone out the window. She just hates it. And she listens to music that I absolutely cannot stand. But, you know,
but
we
Josh,
like a lot
what are her
of
feelings on
things.
Preacher?
She loves Preacher.
No,
She literally it's the best comic that I've ever given her to read. She says it's one of her favorites of all time.
And I'm dating a girl who does love comics, reads them every week, hates Watchmen, hated League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, and now I'm terrified to give her The Dark Knight Returns. But I don't care. You know, big deal.
You like other things.
I was surprised. Little disappointed, saddened, maybe.
For a few minutes,
and then I moved on.
I want to call about Watchmen. I'm not going to lie. Like, can we talk about this? Because you're wrong.
Well, that's the conversation I had. And she recognizes its merits, just doesn't like really dark stories.
I would say that I appreciate open-mindedness in another person. And to at least try something.
I have a friend, and his girlfriend, soon-to-be fiancé, no spoilers, like hates The Wire, and she thinks it's bad. She said, no, it's stupid. And I'm like, you need to go. you need to not buy that thing you were thinking about buying. This is a non-comic book person, so we're totally cool on this. It doesn't listen. She needs to go.
Because that's why I'm terrified of The Dark Knight Returns, because that could be the Fisher. That could be the breaking point.
It's a pretty testicular group of pages.
You got to go.
Yeah. Us? So. I'm sorry.
We'll find out. I kind of keep wanting to hand it to her, but I also kind of don't want to have the conversation when she hates it.
Let me ask you this. Will she sit through JFK?
She has shown interest in it. I have JFK on Blu-ray, and I offered her the choice of watching.
No shit. I think JFK, I bought you that.
I offered her the choice of watching JFK or 13 Days, and she chose 13 Days. But she also wants to watch JFK.
They're both excellent films.
JFK sounds drier. I'm just saying from
longer.
A title
it's
perspective.
The longest movie on earth.
Yeah.
Let's do Brian C. from Cleveland, Ohio, and says, I'm writing to ask for advice for all the young guys and girls out there who are having a hard time finding love. As comic fans, many of us spent our formative years on the edges of the social landscape and can be pretty lonely and disheartening. I'm a high school teacher now, so I see teens every day who love this hobby but struggle the way many of us did with finding companionship. What advice would you give to all the fanboys and fangirls out there who are having a hard time finding someone to connect with?
I almost think, and it doesn't mean I'm unsympathetic, but I almost think if you can't find someone who shares some interest with you, you're not trying. You're not looking. And I mean, and you know, but I'm looking at the broader spectrum of saying, you know, find, you know, you can talk to people on Twitter or Tumblr or something.
Well,
finding someone in real life.
He's not really asking about finding someone, another comic fan, just finding someone. Right.
Well, there's definitely more outlets to find people now than there
ever were. Yeah. When Josh and I were in high school.
You didn't know somebody like literally in your class who liked the same things as you, then you were kind of SOL.
Right.
At least where I was. Connor, you did a different sort of.
But still, I mean, it wasn't that situation. Much different. It wasn't like you could, right. You know, you had Twitter friends or Facebook.
Yeah.
Friends. You had people in your class.
The way that it works is you have to put yourself out there. Or no one's going to find you. You can't sit at home and think, I'd love to meet somebody, but it's never going to happen if you don't take the risk and go
and
out.
You met your wife at a party, if I'm remembering correctly.
Well, I'd known her in college.
Right, but I mean, like, you hung out with
her. I had to go. I did have to go to a party on Halloween.
I hate parties.
I do hate parties, and I hate Halloween.
But you went out there and ended up meeting your wife.
I also met that other girl that night who liked G.I. Joe. So who knows where that could have gone. But
I think you're, I mean,
Ken Connor still remembers that.
So there's two things at play. I think one, you have to get out there. I think Jessica's absolutely correct. The other thing is I think you have to be really okay with who you are. Because if you're not confident in yourself, then you won't, you know, the number one thing that both men and women say that they are attracted to is confidence. And I realize that can be an issue, but you have to be okay with who you are. If you're not okay with who you are, you're not going to be okay in a relationship anyway. It's going to go badly. That's what I.
On the other hand, don't be so confident that you're annoying.
Right. Well, there's a fine line. Not arrogant.
That's the thing that nerds do. They'll overdo it. They start calling everybody sir, and it's weird.
What do you think about faking it until you make it?
Well, that's what you have to. It's what I'm doing now. It's every relationship. Now.
Yeah.
It's every life, I believe.
The job. It's life.
Yeah.
So I would say, Brian, for everyone out there who Brian is asking on behalf of, just you have to go out there. You have to try. You have to meet people. There's so many comic book related social events now, at least around big cities. But
you can lay a lot of groundwork on social networking. I know that's sort of an easy answer. But if you have it, use it. Like if you have a local comic shop or there are local Facebook groups or anything like that are interested in the kind of stuff that you're interested in, it's a great way to meet people. It doesn't necessarily have to be comics. I mean,
no.
But you have to put yourself out there and you meet people and you try a bunch of things.
Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. And for the high school kids in Brian's class, you're screwed. It's high school.
What? Yeah. What do you?
High school sucks.
What do you think about trying to be someone different?
You know that thing you are? Don't be that thing.
Yeah. Don't be that thing.
Put a mask. Pretend to be someone else. You're fine. And then do that for the rest of your life if it works out.
Make it someone that you could never possibly be and probably wouldn't like in real life. Be that person. This is bad advice. I'm sorry.
That is satirical advice.
Satirical advice, yeah.
Just want to put that out there.
Hey, let's try voicemail.
All right.
Hey, iFanboys. This is Oscar from San Antonio, Texas. I just had a breakup 2 years ago, and we still stayed friends probably about like for a year and a half. But it was a girlfriend that I broke up with, and the thing that kind of made me sore about the whole situation of our breakup or, you know, the breakup of our friendship finally, because I do no longer speak to her, is that she bought comic books for another guy in front of me during a Christmas season. And it was just one of those things that kind of pissed me off and kind of just rubbed me the wrong way. And I just wanted to know, do you think this is more insulting than her not wanting to read comic books during the time that we dated? I'd just like to hear your opinion on this because, you know, it was pretty good, you know, type of comic book that she was looking for. It was, you know, an independent comic, but nonetheless, you know, the guy probably has good taste, but still, it just rubbed me the wrong way. Anyway, I'd like to hear your thoughts about it. Thanks.
So just as clarification, Oscar sent in some more information and clarified it a bit. Basically, when he dated this girl, he tried to get her interested in comics. She ignored it. She showed no interest in it. And then they went shopping for Christmas presents. And for her boyfriend, she went to the comic store and bought comics with him. And he took that as an insult, which I think it's a little messed up myself.
Which part's messed up?
The fact that she went shopping to this place that she knew Oscar liked. But when they dated, she showed no interest in and was doing it for the new guy.
Here's the problem. Now, I've listened to a lot of Dan Savage in the years. You broke up with her.
Right. Well, that's the other. Yeah.
It's none of your business.
It's none of his business, absolutely. But also, I think that she could have gone shopping at the comic store another day.
Maybe, but at the same time, like if you're going to be friends and do the thing afterwards, if she's changed. I mean, that's why you broke up theoretically, because either you changed in the process of being together, and that's one of the effects of it. And you can't really. That's the case.
And
you know?
Also, it sounds like just trying to think from her perspective. Oscar said he broke up with her, right? And so
That's key.
I mean, is it possible that she feels like because of that, there wouldn't be any kind of residual feelings that would lead to him feeling
or
jealous about that?
Or
that
on purpose.
We don't have enough information.
No.
But.
It's a messy situation. It's always messy when you stay close friends with an ex. I mean, I'm friendly with a lot of my exes, but I don't like hang out with any of them. I've not gone shopping with any of them. But
yeah, I mean, but I don't think you have a basis to be angry. It sounds like you broke up a while ago. Things have changed, but you know, people change. The things people like change. You're going to tell her she can't like comics now? That's silly. You wanted her to like comics, and you're still friends with her. So, you know, she has the right to like those things, and you shouldn't. That you don't really have much ground to stand on in terms of being upset with her for
it. He said that they've tried to maintain a friendly relationship, and it sounds like maybe she's using his expertise, you know, and saying, you know, if we're friends, maybe you'll help me pick out a good gift for this guy that I like.
And if you're not cool with her dating another dude when she's doing, then you probably shouldn't be hanging out with her because you're not in the right headspace for that.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't tell if it's the dude thing or is the comic thing.
Mm.
You know,
it's probably a combination of the two.
Right. I can mean, see how he would be hurt.
It's like if two chicks read comics together. Like that's kind of cool, and everyone's okay with it. But if like she goes and reads comics with another guy, then maybe that is this wrong. I feel like this is wrong. Confused.
I can see why he'd be hurt by it, but you're right. It's not his business anymore. But I can also see why he would be hurt because it was a special thing he tried to get her into, and she didn't get into it. And now she is, but it would make him. I can feel like it would make him feel lesser because this guy got it to work and he didn't.
I think just my feeling from the tone of the message is that there are maybe some residual excess feelings. And
yeah,
they need to sort of sit down and figure out what the relationship is right now. And if it honestly bothers you and you want to continue being friends, then you should figure out why it bothers you and maybe express that to her and see if that's a reasonable thing, that maybe we won't talk about that.
See, I don't know, though, because I don't think she did anything wrong.
No, I don't think she did anything wrong either.
So therefore, like...
Unless she did it, I don't know.
I don't think so either, but...
Benefit of the doubt.
But we don't know the whole situation, so... But
you put her in a situation now where she has to feel bad about what she did, even though she didn't really... Then that's not really fair. I'm saying don't start, ain't be none. Socrates, I'm married and would really like some...
this is a fun
cosplay
one.
Action with my wife. I have no problem asking, and I think she would go along with it. However, I've been thinking of a possible consequences. For example, what if she thinks I then read comics because I fantasize about female characters, which I never really have, but I've always wanted, quote, to do, unquote, it with a girl wearing Storm's original giant-size X-Men outfit and other outfits like the Purple Catwoman outfit and Invincible's Adam Eve pink outfit. What if this becomes a thing and 20 years down the line she no longer fits into that purple Catwoman outfit and my blue Bucky spandex pants highlight more roles than dinner plate? Can one go back to normal sex after cosplay freakiness? Oh, this is a great question.
Yeah.
Would either of you gentlemen like to take a fork and go for this?
All I'm going to say is you can definitely go back. That's the extent of my answer on this one.
I believe that it is good. And it is healthy.
It's definitely. This is great.
Explore these things. But your worry is that you won't be able to go back. And I think that means that you don't want to lose track of what the thing is that is working for you.
And don't make it about the costume. I mean, the costume is like the fun element of it. But it's not. I mean, it's not the thing. And I do question, though. He says he doesn't fantasize about the characters, but he does seem to have a laundry list of very specific characters he would like to sleep with.
Yeah. He then does fantasize about the character. He doesn't fantasize about
the them, but these are the ones that I would fantasize
but it's
about.
Not, and I'm not saying that's
and
wrong.
I do.
I'm just saying in his
just embrace here. It.
Yeah. You know, they're fun. It's not people fantasize about people on TV shows and movies.
All right, well, here's the thing. If your wife is down and she is okay to do these things for you, that also keep in mind now you owe her.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have to help her indulge in a thing that she likes,
right? And be cool about it.
Yeah, and be cool about
it.
Also,
about it.
You have to be, Legolas or something.
I feel like he'd like that. I feel like he'd be okay with it. Maybe not the wig,
but I think it's good. I think it's healthy for everyone to explore what they're into in a safe way, as long as it's
He's talking about cosplay, and he's also talking about role play here. The word play is in it, so. That seems harmless to me.
But don't make that the focus of the whole thing. It's not just about
don't
that. So that
make
you get
the
obsessed
mistake
with that.
That Josh did, where he got really fixated on getting the voice right.
Yeah, I got.
And then
stopping.
He had to go into the other room and practicing the voice into his hand. And
yeah,
that was when he was doing Bane stuff. A lot of Bane cosplay.
Bane play. Bane play is.
I don't
tricky.
Know what you want.
Just hold the vest with your thumbs. Yes.
Never get to the point where you're each holding a script in one hand.
Right. Well, then that's
you want all hands free. Yeah.
And also, this may go without saying. It's fun, and it's. I feel like we're getting right out of our purview, but it's probably going to be funny, and it will be fun to laugh and just remember that it's all in good fun. It doesn't have to be taken very seriously, and
right.
It will. There's no way it's not silly. But
exactly.
That's cool.
That's good.
I would also say don't get hung up on continuity.
Right.
You know what?
Be open to new interpretations.
Here's what I think you should do. I think you should take her down to Dragon Con and just point around and go, do anything for you? How about that?
Well, here's my other question. In the second part here, he says his blue Bucky spandex pants. Does that mean he has a corresponding outfit for each of these Does he have an Invincible costume? Is he going to be dressed as Batman?
That's the continuity thing, Paul.
Is he going to be Cyclops or Wolverine here? I mean, it's interesting.
I think you should embrace the Amalgam comics concept and mix and match a little bit, just as we do with our fleshy bits.
If she's not into it, I bet you can find something online to take the edge off. Just a guess.
Just remember, those comics double as a menu.
Wow.
In a different way. All right. Alex from California. I was recently promoted at my job and have employees for the first time. Building my team was an incredible experience and had so far been working out pretty well. There's one employee who is a few years older than me, but a truly fantastic person. We hang out a lot after work, go drinking together frequently, and have built a very interesting relationship both at and outside of the office. My question to you is, if I already have the first four Absolute Sandmans, do I really need the fifth? It just feels like back material. Also, I think I'm in love with my employee.
Tough.
Yeah, I don't have the Absolute Sandman, so that's an issue right away.
He's in a legal problem more than anything.
Uh-huh.
If you're the boss, that really is... I mean, most companies don't even allow... You know, you can't...
It depends on your company.
I'm looking over my cubicle at Carol, and she's just shaking her head vigorously.
Right. She's saying no. I mean, it's... Most companies have a... You know, you can't date subordinates because you get into a sexual harassment scenario.
And so I just have to say, Carol looks lovely today.
Carol and I have our issues. I know I'm already... I've got many warnings in my file. Which is fine.
His file
is a box.
It looks like the Bible. It's a big, thick, yellow.
Carol and I are
there's
detox.
A placeholder ribbon. Because she reads through those transcripts over and over again. Don't you, Carol?
It's Connor's absolute HR file.
It's hard. I've been in workplace romances a few times, and never in that situation where I was either a subordinate or a boss, always at the same level. So I never had to deal with, but you're in a very sticky situation there. I can't give any kind of legal, because I don't know what the legal.
Well, it's not legal per se. You got to check with your if there's an HR department.
Well, if it becomes a sexual harassment thing, it becomes a legal issue.
Yeah. No, I know that, but you're not there yet. You can check and see. Sure. Is this not allowed at my job at all? And then in which case you have decisions to make.
You could always fire that person and then start dating them.
There's your legal problem right there.
I mean, I'm sure that's fine.
It's a loophole.
I'm sure they would be okay with that.
If they're not working for you anymore, what's the problem?
Right.
Yeah. And obviously it's their fault that they're being so distracting. So
why are you get them out why of are you so sexy?
Can you transfer them to a different department?
It depends on what kind of job. I mean, you work are you at the KFC? And then it's not such a big deal probably.
Are you at the defense department?
Yeah, that then a little bit more so. There's some army issues going on.
I also like the David Brent model of administration where you're partially boss but also partially entertainer.
And also a half friend.
It's
partially boss, partially entertainer, 50% buddy.
There's questions. I think the questions that we need to really be able to go in. Now he specifically says, or she, I guess Alex is sort of
right.
Non-denominational. Nebulous.
Also California.
Says I'm in love. Mm. Now that's a big deal.
Right.
That's a big deal. So that love indicates that you'd be willing to
fire that person.
Make some sort of sacrifice or change things around
if you're afraid to bring romance into the workplace, why don't you put the workplace into your romance and give evaluations at the end? There's a level of consistency.
It's tough because
they would be different categories.
If you started a relationship and it went badly and you're their boss, it's going to get very complicated.
Yeah. Okay. But then the other question is, there's no word in here about reciprocation.
That's true too. Is there?
So before you start throwing bombs and everything, maybe find out more.
Right. Have you talked about it? Has there been any kind of flirtation?
You should say come into this to my office for a meeting to discuss important business matters. No.
What you should do is you should hire a Kilpatrick so that they can make sure.
Yeah, have someone from HR observe your liaisons at the bar.
Now, we're making lots of dumb jokes here, but this is a tough situation.
No, I've been in sort of that position where I had an administrator kind of job.
In love with you?
No, I've been like sort of in the office, and
it's hard because as the old joke goes, you're with these people more than you're with your family, and that's
not often good for a relationship. Just putting
But it's also tough because oftentimes that leads to these kind of situations where you start to develop feelings for people because you're around them all the time, sometimes it's real, sometimes it's not real. It can be fun. It can be super fun to date him.
Sure.
It's a bit of coworker, but it can also go really badly.
I'm just saying, tread lightly, cover your ass, and make sure.
Make sure, yes. I would definitely investigate what your company's policies are about these kind of things. And then also, if this person actually feels the same way. If not, also, if they do, then fire them and date them. That's my advice.
You know, honestly, I would feel kind of – if I'd bought four of the Absolute Sandmans and the fifth one was just there, it would drive me insane. And I'm not even anal about that kind of thing.
Right.
You need to get the fifth, I think. It's like that fourth Queen and Country book.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You're right. I agree.
You get by without it, but it's nice to have it there.
So we wanted to thank everyone who, went out on a limb and wrote us these emails. We'll try to write back to all the people who didn't get on the show. And
some of them had terms that I didn't understand.
So thank you, everyone, for doing that. And this was lots of fun for us. Hopefully it was fun for you. In the meantime, you can send us emails of the non-relationship variety until we bring this back again to contact@ifanboy.com or call our voicemail line at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697, and tell us your name and where you're from, and keep it to around 30 seconds. Keep those coming in for the show. Plug things, Paul.
Plug things.
Wait a minute. Oh, another page in my file.
Oh, gosh. So still over on Comic Book Resources, I'm doing every Sunday, the Sunday Conversation around noontime Eastern, talking to different creators about things in and around the subject of comics. I think I just stole Around Comics' tagline.
I did unintentionally.
But we're talking about some things like, let's see, I just spoke to Alesh Kott, who's got his new Zero trade paperback coming out, the first arc of that story. And we talked about out-of-body experiences. It's a very transcendental conversation, and I was a little afraid part of the time. Also, over on the Fuzzy Typewriter podcast, just go over to fuzzytypewriter.com. Every week, we're talking about new episodes of Justified and True Detective. Loving the hell out of True Detective this season. It's the only season, but no, it's fantastic. We're having a lot of fun.
A man can love two women at the same time, right?
I don't know that a man can. The openings to those podcasts are likely the most important work I've ever done.
Wow.
So if you listen to just 2 minutes of podcasts, listen to the opening 2 minutes of those podcasts.
Well, there you go.
That's what I'm up to.
Head over to ifanboy.com. You can find all of our old shows, including our most recent special edition shows, which we've done on animated movies and interviews with creators. You find all that at ifanboy.com. You can also comment on this show. Tell us what you thought of this show. Tell us what you thought of the books of the week. Tell us, hey, if you got relationship questions, you can put them in the comments. So we can talk about them there. We're very flexible. In the meantime, twitter.com/ifanboy, facebook.com/ifanboy is where you can find all the show announcements, plus the announcement of the pick of the week before the show comes out. So you can, if you are so inclined, read it before the show happens. And you can also follow us individually. C.S. Kilpatrick, J.A. Flanagan, and Fuzzy Typewriter on Twitter.
Yes. I lost my thing. Hold on.
Email, voicemail.
It's the same there thing you say every week.
I know. You can email or voicemail us. Can you voicemail? Is that a verb?
It's a verb,
does that
yeah.
work? contact@ifanboy.com or 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697 with questions, comments, discussions. Like we said, you can send in more relationship questions, but we'll do this again. We'll gather them all again. So let's get some more comic book stuff in. Some good comic book business.
Meat and potatoes, comic book stuff from the heartland.
We need some new ones. Let's talk about how comics work. We're talking about the business, but the other stuff. Let's hash it out. We learn by doing that too.
I don't want to talk about the business.
You know what I'm saying.
You don't have to.
Paul could just go, abstain! Mute.
If this kind of thing turns you on, write us a review in iTunes. Better yet, tell your friends about us. Introduce your significant other to podcasts. Spread that iFanboy around. And even if they don't like it, that doesn't mean... Actually, that's probably a good sign if this doesn't work for them and they're a keeper. You're the one with the problem.
That's true. So, I think we did some good today. We saved some relationships. Made some people happier.
I think we stopped some bad relationships from happening.
We used our mistakes to help you not make your own mistakes.
So there you go. Hope everyone can note the joking tenor of those last few sentences. I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
I'm Josh Flanagan, happily married man. as
for how long until she throws Preacher at?
Well, that's not going to happen. She's got taste. Because it's no lie.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.